Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your humble host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show. Well, we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So good to have you with us again for another broadcast, or should I say podcast. We go worldwide here on the World Wide Web, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. So whether you're in Taipei or London or out on the West Coast or even out on the East Coast, well, you can get the show anytime, and we're glad to have you. I want to start out with something that drives me insane. First of all, let me say, in regards to the mining disaster that occurred in West Virginia, I'm as saddened as anyone that the miners were not found alive. And I did follow the story this past week, and it was... That's a tragedy, okay? That is a tragedy by definition. But what drives me insane, CNN reported that the mining disaster could have been avoided. And I'm thinking to myself, is this the cream of the crop of the journalism schools to point out that the explosion in the mine could have been avoided? Well, obviously it could have been avoided because it had been avoided for a number of days, weeks, and even years leading up to the explosion. So thank you very much, Ms. Anchorwoman. I realize it could have been avoided. The only thing that makes me more insane than that is when they say that something could have been much worse. Yeah. Thank you very much for pointing out the obvious, Mr. Fox News reporter. It could have been a lot worse. There could have been 5,000 people in the mine, I suppose, and all of West Virginia could have collapsed into the earth, and I suppose that would have made it a lot worse. There's about 1,000,006 ways in which it could have been a lot worse, and it really doesn't help us to digest the depth of the tragedy for ignorant reporters to report that, well, it could have been avoided, it could have been much worse. Anyway, but let's put that aside. Let's move to the serious news of the week from the Daily Mail over in London, Dateline, Port Stephens, Australia. A 24-year-old Muslim woman died a terrifying death last week when a fluttering part of her burqa became caught in the wheels of a go-kart she was driving. Yeah, the Muslim clothing the woman was wearing flew back as she sped around the track, and part of what I think is the third holiest outfit in Islam, the burqa, was entangled in the go-kart's wheels, and the young lady was strangled to death. Indeed, a tragedy. Now, that's a tragedy. So she's like the Muslim Isadora Duncan. Yeah. But at least this poor young lady didn't pollute the culture with modern dance before her untimely death and meeting with Jesus Christ, her creator and the judge of all the earth. But a sad story nonetheless. Why did I open up with a bummer? I usually try to open up with something a little more... Well, here's something good. Let's forget about the tragedies that I've been talking about for the last 3 minutes. And let's go to Augusta, Georgia, from Yahoo News. Phil Mickelson eclipsed the return of Tiger Woods there at the Masters tournament and apparently won the tournament today. And, well, it just couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. And with all the hullabaloo about Tiger Woods' return to golf, Tiger got whooped by Phil and I think a couple other guys. But the interesting thing about this story is that Amy Mickelson, that's Phil's wife, by the way, she hasn't been to a golf tournament since she was diagnosed with breast cancer 11 months ago. She was at the Masters. And Yahoo News reports that Mickelson shared a long embrace with his wife behind the 18th green. And as he walked to the scoring trailer, a single tear trickled down his cheek to his lip. Congratulations, Phil Mickelson, not only for winning the Masters, but for being a fine, upstanding representative of all-American manhood as opposed to one Tiger Woods, the philandering part-time Buddhist or whatever he is. Anyway, good to see Phil. By the way, Phil inspired me to play golf. I played for, I think, about 25 minutes, and that was about it for me. Anyway, Phil's a lefty, so I thought, well, I'm a lefty, so Phil inspired me to play golf, but I lost interest because I spent the summer playing golf. I was never able to break 100, and I found it true that golf is indeed a good walk spoiled. So anyway, but congratulations to Phil, and thank you for, well, it's just awesome to see, it was just awesome to see him and his wife embracing after the tournament, and to know that Phil's not a dirtbag. Gives us some hope for the future. Now, speaking of dirtbags, one Mitt Romney, according to CBS News, has, well, according to the headline, it says Mitt Romney wins GOP presidential straw poll. Yes, that's out at the Southern Republican Leadership Conference, where a number of Republicans gathered. And I changed the headline to read, Mitt Romney purchases GOP presidential straw poll. Yeah. Romney, by the way, won by a single vote over Ron Paul, who I think is that the dog catcher from Texas? Is he a dog catcher? Or perhaps he's on a student council down there somewhere. Anyway, Ron Paul is not the biggest force in Republican politics, is all I'm trying to say. And Mitt Romney had to send his minions down there and spread a lot of money around in order to eke out a single vote victory against Ron Paul, who I believe was last seen wearing a tinfoil hat and being chased by a black helicopter, from what I understand. So anyway, Mitt has purchased, he's trying to revive his tragic political career. Well, not tragic, criminal, actually. And so he spread some money around down there and has purchased himself a victory and a few headlines. But Mitt, I'm glad to say, Mitt, that you might just want to take it back to Salt Lake or Boston or wherever you're from these days, because we're not buying it anymore, okay? All right, now, speaking of embarrassing politicians, let's move on into the war file. Barry Ho has decided that he's going to limit when the United States would use nuclear arms. This is from the New York Times. The once vaunted gray lady and once thought of as the paper of record. Barry described his new policy as part of a broader effort to edge the world toward making nuclear weapons obsolete. For the first time, the United States is explicitly committing not to use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear states that are in compliance with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, even if they attacked the United States with biological or chemical weapons or launched a cyber attack. So Barry's taking the nukes off the table in regards to countries that are in compliance with the Non-Proliferation Treaty. He did leave the door open for North Korea and Iran that we could still possibly nuke them. Liberals, they were hoping for a blanket statement from Barry that the country would never be the first to use nuclear weapons, but Barry wasn't willing to go that far for his liberal brethren. Asked about the escalating confrontation with Iran, Mr. Obama said he was now convinced that the current course they're on, quote, would provide them with nuclear weapons capabilities, although he gave no timeline. When asked whether he shared Israel's view that a nuclear-capable Iran was as dangerous as one that actually possessed weapons, well, he pretty much dodged that. He said, I'm not going to parse that right now. And it seems like a fairly simple question to Barry. I mean, Iran is on the road to nuclear weapons, Barry. Isn't that just as bad as them already having nuclear weapons? To which Barry could have just said, no, it's not as bad. It's not as bad as if they actually had nuclear weapons. Well, how bad would that be, Barry? Follow-up question. Then we could have gotten down to the meat of the issue, but Barry dodged the question. He says, I'm not going to parse that right now. Perhaps Barry will parse the question, the serious questions, about Iran when Tel Aviv reaches 2,800 degrees. Perhaps that's when Barry will address the serious questions. Now, as if our president taking the nukes off the table isn't embarrassing enough in a dangerous world. We have Sarah Palin stepping forward to prove that the socialists and the Democrats do not have a corner on the market on embarrassing statements. Here's what she said. She was pontificating on Barry's limits to the use of U.S. nuclear weapons. This is according to ABC News. She said, remarking on Barry's new nuclear policy, or as George W. Bush would say, Barry's nuclear policy, she said, it's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. Yeah, and she said this last Wednesday while she was appearing on, which show was it? Was it Rush Limbaugh? No. No, it was Mark Levin. No, wait a minute. Hugh Hewitt. No, wait. No, it was Sean Hannity. That's right. It's Fox News. That would be Sean Hannity. It's really hard to tell them apart. You'll have to forgive me. She was on Sean Hannity's show when she said, it's just unbelievable. It's kind of like getting out there on a playground and a bunch of kids getting ready to fight. And one of the kids says, go ahead, punch me in the face and I'm not going to retaliate. Go ahead and do what you want with me. Unquote. And I thought, that's what it's like, Sarah? Is that what it's like? Because, Sarah, I'm no speechwriter. But let me just give you a little advice. When you use an analogy, Sarah, you should try to base your analogy on a situation that is somewhat probable, that people can somehow relate to, and that helps to make your point while inviting deeper thought on the issue. But this analogy of a kid saying, go ahead and punch me in the face, I'm not going to retaliate. Sarah, I was on a lot of playgrounds. I never encountered anything like that, ever. I mean, maybe if you're on the playground with Mahatma Gandhi, I don't know. But I mean, this was just ludicrous, pointless, confusing. Sarah, please. Go back to whatever, oiling Todd's snow machine or whatever it is you do, because it's just embarrassing, Sarah. It's just sad. Anyway, I mean, were you ever on a playground where a kid did that? Go ahead, punch me in the face, eh? I just don't recall that ever happening, so I was not able to relate, Sarah. I don't know. All right, on deeper into the war file, from Kabul, Afghanistan, from the Associated Press, Afghan President Hamid Karzai threatened last week to quit the political process and join the Taliban. Yeah, that's Hamid Karzai. That's our guy over there, right? Anyway, lawmakers there in Afghanistan dismissed his comments as hyperbole. Imagine someone would have to explain hyperbole to Sarah Palin. Well, I've already explained analogy, so I'm not going to explain hyperbole for her. Anyway, not to beat up on Sarah. All right, let's focus on the matter at hand here: the war file. Hamid Karzai threatening to join the Taliban. Farouk Marinai, who represents the eastern province of Nangarhar, there in Afghanistan, he said that rebelling would change to resistance if Hamid were to join the Taliban. I'm not sure what that means either. Two other lawmakers said Karzai has twice raised the threat to join the insurgency against U.S. troops there in Afghanistan. Lawmakers felt Karzai was merely pandering, though, to the hardline pro-Taliban members of parliament and had no real intention of joining the insurgency. You know, I've been wondering how it is that Hamid Karzai is still alive. I remember when he was elected in whenever that was, back a number of years ago, that I pronounced him to be a dead man walking because I thought he was on our side. But I don't know. Perhaps there is a reason Hamid Karzai remains alive. And perhaps it has something to do with the Taliban and opium and, you know, things that are going on that we're not really made aware of on a daily basis because we don't have any journalists anymore. We don't have any reporters anymore. All right. Speaking of a story that was little covered this past week from Seoul, South Korea, from the war file, the Associated Press, North Korea has sentenced an American teacher to 8 years of hard labor and ordered him to pay a $700,000 fine after he crossed illegally into the country. And by the way, he's the fourth U.S. citizen to be detained by the isolated regime, according to the AP, since last year. So four Americans have been detained. Ajalon Molly Gomes of Boston. He was arrested in the north for trespassing. Now, I've been arrested for trespassing. And, well, 8 years of hard labor and a $700,000 fine seems a bit extreme to me. Let's see, the verdict was issued by the Central Court, North Korea's highest court, and the verdict is final and cannot be appealed. So here we have an American sentenced to 8 years of hard labor in North Korea. The North, apparently, according to sources inside South Korea, the North appears to want to use his case as a bargaining chip in negotiations with the U.S. on its nuclear program. And one thing that Barry Ho has made abundantly clear to our enemies, especially those aspiring to be our nuclear-armed enemies, or as George Bush would say, our nuclear-armed enemies, one thing Barry is open to is he's always open to a bargaining chip. Of the jihad. Speaking of the jihad, Ahmadinejad, the Iranian leader, he said last Wednesday, well, first he called President Barack Obama a nuclear-armed cowboy and said Iran would try to make an opportunity out of sanctions rather than change its stance to avoid them. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said that, well, quote, "We do not welcome the idea of threat or sanctions, but we would never implore those who threaten us with sanctions to reverse their sanctions against us." See, he says he's not going to bow down and beg us not to to apply sanctions to him. He's going to stand his ground, says Mahmoud. Now, Ahmadinejad was speaking just as Barry Ho was being schnookered by President Dmitry Medvedev of Russia into signing a nuclear arms reduction treaty in Prague. Barry says that he was working with Medvedev together at the United Nations Security Council to pass strong sanctions on Iran. That's Barry thinks that Medvedev is working with him, which is sort of interesting to think that. Here's how Medvedev positioned his negotiations. "Tehran is not reacting to a range of suggested constructive compromise agreements. No, we can't close our eyes to this. That is why I do not exclude that the Security Council will have to examine this question again." So, sounds like Mr. Medvedev is getting the better of Barry in the negotiations process, because Barry thinks they're working together, and Medvedev, well, he pretty much said nothing. I mean, he strung some words together, don't get me wrong, but relatively meaningless. Anyway, Major General Hassan Firouzabadi, did I get that right? Firouzabadi, who's an Iranian major general, he said, "If America presents Iran with a serious threat and undertakes any measures, none of the American soldiers who are currently in the region will go back to America alive." Okay, so Mr. Hassan Firouzabadi, he's willing to let us know exactly where he stands. Meanwhile, Barry is being wooed to sleep by Medvedev. And, well, it's all just, it's not going to end, it's not going to end well with Iran. Meanwhile, Benjamin Netanyahu, he's backed out of a nuclear, summit. Yeah. You've heard about the nuclear summit. So there is a nuclear summit coming up April 12th and 13th, a big conference, and Netanyahu says he's not going. He plans to send a deputy and two senior advisors. This is according to Reuters, because some countries, including Egypt and Turkey, he found out they plan to say that Israel must sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and Israel has never acknowledged having nuclear weapons, nor do they plan to do so. By the way, Israel's Dimona reactor has produced plutonium, enough plutonium, it's suspected, for between 80 and 200 warheads. And I personally hope it's closer to 200, and really hope it's closer to 600. Netanyahu originally agreed to go to this bogus nuclear summit after being pressured by the United States and being reassured that the summit would focus only on efforts to secure fissile material. But Bibi was smarter than Barry and has avoided the setup. He's just not going to go. And why should he? Good to see Bibi. It's good to see that there's someone left on our side who still knows how to negotiate. We'll have to hope Bibi does well over there. Anyway, on through the war file. It's been a fairly embarrassing week to be a part of Western civilization against the Muslim hordes. In Washington, President Barry Ho, his advisors, plan to remove terms such as Islamic radicalism from a document outlining national security strategy and will use the new version of this document to emphasize that the United States does not view Muslim nations through the lens of terrorism. Yeah, that's... Barry's such a nice guy. Now, the national security strategy, you may not be aware, according to the Associated Press, it's a document that currently states, quote, "The struggle against militant Islamic radicalism is the great ideological conflict of the early years of the 21st century." So it's a document that points out something fairly obvious, but we need those type of documents when it comes to governance. We have a draft of what Barry Ho is changing the document to say. Now, this is just a draft. We don't know if this is going to be the final version. The draft that we were privy to says that the struggle against intolerance, homophobia, and birthers is the greatest ideological conflict of the 21st century. Now, again, that's just a draft. Don't hold me responsible if that's not word for word, but it'll probably end up pretty close. Now, let's jump over to the Wall Street Journal again from the war file. In an op-ed piece, the Wall Street Journal has reported that the U.S. has backed away from pursuing a number of tough measures against Iran in order to win Russian and Chinese support for one more U.N. sanctions resolution, more popularly known as the unsanctions. Why are they unsanctions? Well, because the Russians and the Chinese are simply going to schnooker Barry and all of his fools, Hillary at that state, and all the other fools who want to negotiate with these people. Barry was, it was Hillary. Hillary was at the AIPAC conference, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. She called a nuclear-armed Iran there at her speech. She said a nuclear-armed Iran is, quote, unacceptable, unquote. She said that, according to the Wall Street Journal, no fewer than four times in a single paragraph in her speech to AIPAC. Now, you'll remember, and the Wall Street Journal does a wonderful job of reminding us, that President Obama set a number of deadlines last year for a negotiated settlement of Iran's nuclear file, all of which Tehran ignored, and then, the Wall Street Journal says, Mr. Obama promptly just decided to ignore them too. Yeah. In his latest Persian New Year message to Iran, interesting, our president delivering Persian New Year messages. I don't want to get into that. But in his latest Persian New Year message, Obama made the deadline waiver permanent, saying, quote, "Our offer of comprehensive diplomatic contacts and dialogue stands." I suppose it'll still stand after Tel Aviv reaches 6,400 degrees. It's just embarrassing. What else do we have here? Anything? The article was titled, by the way, "Unserious About Iran." There at the Wall Street Journal, the Chinese, according to the article, have indicated that the most they are prepared to support are narrow sanctions. Meanwhile, the Iranians continue to acquire key nuclear components from unsuspecting Western companies via intermediaries, including Chinese firms. So while the Chinese and the Russians are promising Barry that, yes, of course we want to work with you, you're such a nice young fellow, the Chinese are actually helping facilitate Iran's nuclear program. And the Russians, well, they're just embarrassing Barry. That's all. Just embarrassing him. But all is not lost. If you thought that the Barry Ho presidency may be at a low point, well, according to Fox News, the president and the first lady sat down for a taping with American Idol. Yes, it was reported that Barry Ho and his MO laughed a lot during the taping of American Idol, the very popular American television show. It was ostensibly this special episode of American Idolatry. It was ostensibly done for charity. Beneficiaries include the Children's Health Fund, Feeding America, Malaria No More, Save the Children, their American programs, and the United Nations Foundation, the UNFoundation. How appropriate that Barry would be working to raise money for the UNFoundation. Seeing as what he's doing to the foundations of our country is, well, he's putting us on an UNFoundation, frankly. Anyway, the show will air on April 21st, and I, for one, cannot wait to see what Michelle Obama wears. All right. Now let's move into the politics file as we glide effortlessly from, well, the doomed path of our war against Muslim extremists and the thin ice of our negotiating position vis-a-vis Russia, China, and Iran. Let's move back here within the friendly confines of the good old U.S. of A., and we'll go to Albany, New York, from the Associated Press. U.S. Senator Charlie Chuck Schumer said Sunday that he's trying to get the federal government to prohibit airlines from charging a fee for carry-on baggage. So just when you thought there was no one left in the socialist government that was looking out and taking care of the important business of government, Chuck Schumer rears his ugly head. He says charging a fee for carry-on baggage is a slap in the face to travelers. And I think he knows something about that. Didn't he slap a waitress around or a stewardess around? I don't think he actually slapped her. Anyway, Chucky Schumer, he's making a personal plea, according to the Associated Press, to the Treasury Department to stop Spirit Airlines from charging a $45 carry-on fee. Chuck Schumer is putting his foot down. He may have destroyed the financial foundation of the country. He may have dragged us headlong into a socialist welfare state from which we may never escape, but he is going to save us from the carry-on fee over at Spirit Airlines and any other airline who might think about doing the same. Now, this is just embarrassing. It's just embarrassing. This is what our governing officials occupy their time with. Chuck, if people don't want to pay a $45 fee over at Spirit Airlines, they'll just stop flying Spirit Airlines, and Spirit Airlines will go out of business. This is a perfect example of the misguided judgment of, well, Chuck Schumer. I mean, I don't know what combination of prescription medications he's on, and that's only a theory of mine and just my opinion. But he's obviously not thinking clearly. By the way, Spirit Airlines says that they are going to charge $45 for a carry-on bag, but they're going to reduce the cost of their tickets by $40. And, you know, I've noticed this in the airlines. I can't understand how the airlines can charge so little for a flight. It boggles my mind because it seems like I mean, you can't lose money on every deal and make it up in volume. So I just don't know how the airlines have been surviving. And I believe there are a couple of airlines that do this and do it well and are profitable. And I think all the other airlines should just fade away and die. I mean, the bottom line is everyone buys their airline ticket these days based on one factor and one factor alone, and that's the price. And so airlines have been, the legacy airlines, the big bloated airlines, have been forced to compete with younger, leaner airlines, and they just can't do it. And, well, they should just be allowed to just die, financially speaking, and just go away. And let the people who somehow know how to get you somewhere for $99, I mean, let them take over. They're obviously doing a better job. And Chuck Schumer should just mind his own business, for crying out loud. Unbelievable, Chuck Schumer. But if you thought all was lost, there is some hope. Smoking will no longer be permitted below decks on United States Navy submarines. That's according to CNN. That's right. No more smoking on submarines. There will be nicotine replacement therapy widely available on the submarines. Nicorette gum, nicotine patches. That's a nice contract for the folks over at Nicorette, right? Individual submarine commanders will still be allowed to decide if crew members are permitted to smoke above deck. Meanwhile, sodomizing your bunkmate will continue to be tolerated in the Navy. Chuck Schumer, a big advocate of repealing the don't ask, don't tell, don't seek, don't smell policy aboard Navy ships, basically destroying our military with, well, homos, frankly. I mean, homos just aren't good for the military. Meanwhile, so Chucky wants to destroy the military. Meanwhile, he wants to fight against baggage fees. And these are our political leaders in a world that has become increasingly dangerous. Case in point, from the Times of London, President Lech Kaczynski, his wife Maria, an economist, and 95 others died on their way to commemorate the massacre of 22,000 Polish prisoners at Katyn in 1940 by Stalin's secret police. You've all heard the news. Russia Today, a television station, a television program, and other television stations in Russia reported that even before the first attempt to land, the pilot had been dumping fuel, indicating some form of mechanical problem. Now, I was a little surprised that before the flames were even out, Russian news sources were saying there was no foul play. This appears to be pilot error. Now, typically, when there's a plane crash, I remember we had an airplane skid off the runway here in Denver, and it was 8 degrees below zero. And they left that airplane out there for 2 weeks because it was just too cold to do anything. We were all freezing out here. And no one would state why the accident happened because we just didn't know why. The investigation had not been completed. And typically it's months later before a definitive answer can be given on why any plane accident happens or why a crash occurs. But here, Russian news sources were quick with the story that, well, this pilot's obviously some kind of moron, this idiot, right? That's all you heard. Well, so color me somewhat suspicious, that's all. And I'm not generally a conspiracy-minded guy, but just color me suspicious on this one, okay? Now, Kaczynski, they say they have found his body If you're familiar with Lech Kaczynski, if you're familiar with Solidarity and Lech Walesa and the fall of the Soviet Union, Lech Kaczynski figures prominently in all of that. He was a former anti-communist campaigner with a penchant for taunting the Kremlin. And apparently he had every reason to believe he was not welcome in Russia, according to the Times of London. Vladimir Putin, the Russian prime minister, had attended a ceremony earlier in the week to commemorate the Katyn massacre in what was seen as a conciliatory gesture from Moscow. But Polish citizens were generally disappointed that Putin referred to the massacre merely as a crime, not elevating it to the status that it deserves of an atrocity. Indeed, it was an atrocity. But Putin called it a crime. Anyway, Kaczynski was not invited to Putin's event, and there was no promise of a warm welcome at the Smolensk airfield where Kaczynski's plane was attempting to land. But Kaczynski was determined to attend the commemoration of the Katyn massacre, though he says he wasn't doing it to inflame relations with Russia, but he wanted to support the 400 relatives of the victims who were expected to be there. He had actually joked earlier in the week, "I hope I get a visa into Russia." He had made that joke. So I can just picture what has occurred here. And it starts out with a telephone call from Vladimir Putin to a woman whose identity will become clear as the phone call unfolds. Brrr. 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 Hello?
Hello, Hillary. This is Vlad. How are you today?
Well, Vlad, I'm very well. Thank you. How are you? I'm a little surprised to get your call at this hour.
Well, Hillary, I have few problems. I'm hoping to talk to you about them. And by the way, I just want to say that your calves, the way your calves looked on your recent trip to South America was just lovely. I mean, last time we met, I mean, they were almost as big as Hugo Chavez's head, but now you've slimmed down quite nicely, Hillary.
Oh, Vladimir, there's no need to compliment me. You know where my loyalties lie. How can I help?
Well, Hillary, I have a little problem. This Lech Kaczynski in Poland, I'm sure you've heard of him. He's become potentially embarrassing, and, you know, it's really getting under my skin, and I was hoping perhaps you could give me a little bit of advice on how I could maybe make this problem, how you say, disappear.
Well, Vladimir, I didn't realize it had gotten to that point, but believe you me, I know what you mean.
Well, Hillary, I just remembered there was White House counselor. He had some potentially embarrassing papers from, your Rose law firm. His name was Vincent, I do believe.
Oh, yes, Vladimir, Vince Foster. Yes, that did become quite a prickly issue. Let me ask you this. Are there any parks nearby? Maybe you could invite him to a meeting? And you'll want some foliage and some trees, you know, some underbrush.
Well, Hillary, I'm not sure if that is possible. You know, this Kaczynski, he has a whole coterie of followers that, well, frankly, they're all potentially very embarrassing to me, and perhaps... can I ask you, in particular, do you remember Secretary of Commerce Ron Brown?
Why, yes. Yes, I do, Vlad. I remember him quite well.
I remember that he was under investigation. A lot of embarrassing things could come out. He was willing to make a deal with prosecutors, and suddenly his plane flies into a mountain. Yeah, somewhere in Eastern Europe. Can you tell me a little bit more about Ron Brown?
Well, Vlad, it's interesting that you bring that up. You know what? I just noticed that we're not talking on a secure line, so let me switch over to the red phone, and I will call you right back. And that's all the recording that we have. We don't know what the final outcome of that conversation was between Mr. Putin and Hillary Rodham Clinton. But perhaps in the days to come, we may just find out. Let's all pay attention. All right, now let's move from the ridiculous to the horrifying. From Jinja, Uganda, from the Associated Press, the practice of human sacrifice is on the rise in Uganda. I said human sacrifice, that's right. And here's what's happening in Uganda. Body parts are often cut off and used in ceremonies. And human beings are being sacrificed. And apparently, over there in Uganda, the rate of human sacrifice is increasing dramatically. The number of people killed in ritual murders last year rose to a new high, 15 children and 14 adults. And that's in 2009. That's up from just 3 cases in 2007. Children in particular are common victims of human sacrifice in Uganda. And I know what I thought when I read the article. I was like, well, yeah, it's Uganda. I mean, that's like the home of Idi Amin. These people are savages. These people are living in the Stone Age, for all intents and purposes, when it comes to civilization and spirituality. I mean, it's Uganda. What more could you expect from a savage bunch of people in a brutal country living in the Stone Ages? But then I read, and I began to think, as I am often wont to do, the police there in Uganda have established an anti-human sacrifice task force, and they're trying to cut down on this human sacrifice. But listen to what the AP says. Human sacrifices have been recorded throughout history and occur still in many countries, including India, Indonesia, South Africa, Gabon, and Tanzania. One traditional healer in Uganda, when asked about the phenomenon, pointed to the story in the Bible's book of Genesis when God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son. Now, I found it interesting, first of all, that the Associated Press chose to link pagan human sacrifice with a Bible story that, they've simply taken it out of context, number one. And if you read the story, and I'm sure that the reporters at the Associated Press have not, you'll see if you read that story that God did not actually cause Abraham to go through with the sacrifice. And in a dozen or more other places in the Holy Scriptures, the Christian Bible, and the Jewish Scriptures, God expressly condemns human sacrifice. But the story of Abraham and Isaac on Mount Moriah in context is simply too much for me to go into in the limited time I have. But I can assure you that the type of human sacrifice going on in Uganda is in no way related. And the people perpetrating it are certainly not familiar with the story of Abraham and Isaac on Mount Moriah. But let's leave that aside for a moment. According to the Associated Press, the rise in human sacrifice in Uganda appears to come from a desire for wealth and a belief that drugs made from human organs can bring riches. And you remember the countries I mentioned where this happens. It's not only Uganda, but this human sacrifice takes place to this day in India, Indonesia, South Africa, Gabon, and Tanzania. And by the way, it happens in Philadelphia and Los Angeles and Seattle and Denver and Dallas, where the weakest among us are sacrificed because of a desire for wealth and a belief that experiments with their body parts and the drugs that will come from that and the therapies that will come from basically devouring the body parts of these human sacrifice victims causes the civilized, the ostensibly civilized among us, even here in America, to participate every day in a system of child sacrifice that is certainly no less brutal and certainly no less horrifying than what's going on in Uganda. Whereas in Uganda, there is a record of 29 people who were victims of human sacrifice in 2008. Here in America, and just in America alone, child sacrifice was recorded in numbers over 1 million. Over 1 million children sacrificed from a desire for wealth and a belief that drugs and therapies developed from their organs can bring riches to us. So I ask, who are the savages?
When the children cry, let them know we try. 'Cause when the children sing, then the new world begins.
It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. And we're going to move from Uganda and the child sacrifice there, and San Antonio and the child sacrifice there, and Chicago, Baton Rouge, Ottumwa, Iowa. We're going to move from that into the culture file. A story from USA Today. School districts in Iowa and California are developing rules to prevent teachers from bullying teachers. Yes, now, we've all been following the story of the young girl who committed suicide after being bullied, and all of the mainstream media sources on television have been doing specials all week on bullying and the horrors of bullying, while basically ignoring the root cause of bullying, which I would posit is the abandonment of children to the government schools in an environment that can rapidly degrade into something resembling the Lord of the Flies. And I know this because I lived it at one point in my life, and I'm still working to recover from it. But it's worse even than all that, because now school districts are concerned with teachers bullying teachers. The two school districts that I'm discussing here from the USA Today article are believed to be the first nationwide developing anti-bullying policies for their adult employees. Yeah. Let's see. Gary Namy, who is a psychologist, along with his wife, Ruth, who's also a psychologist, that must be an interesting household, they have founded the Workplace Bullying Institute in Bellingham, Washington, and they've got a racket going where they go around to public schools and charge, $10,000, $20,000, $40,000 to set up a program to keep bullies, to keep adults from bullying one another, school teachers. You know. Anyway, the California school district that has set up this anti-bullying prevention, it's bullying prevention program, they spent $45,000 for consulting fees and training for their new bullying policy. By the way, the school district there, where was this in California? Does it even matter? Do I even care where it is? It's in California, La Quinta, California. They spent $45,000. The school district has a $15 million budget shortfall for the next school year, but that hasn't stopped Gary and Ruth Namy two pretty shrewd psychologists from going in and shaking down these poor ignorant suckers for another $45,000. And now, not to laugh too much about the issue, but I can laugh because I don't participate in the government school fraud. I have not been fooled into allowing them to get their hooks into my children. And I certainly hope that if you are sending your children to public school, you realize that you've been lied to. You've been talked into abrogating your responsibility to educate your children, and you've been promised, well, you know what? I would go back to the Uganda story. The Uganda story says people sacrifice their children for a desire for wealth, and, you know, you've been lied to and told that if you and your wife both work and you shuffle your kids off to the government school, that you can achieve the American dream and pursue happiness and do all that. And, folks, it's a big lie, because your children are going to end up messed up. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to end up robbing banks or cooking methamphetamine in a Motel 6 or that they're going to become murderers, but they're simply going to be handicapped, spiritually, emotionally handicapped for the rest of their lives. And the potential that they could have achieved, well, you will never know. You will never know what you have lost if you sacrifice your children to the public school. And I suppose, looking at this story about teacher-on-teacher bullying, you know, all these teachers are products of the public schools, and so I suppose we can't be surprised that they bully each other. Although I think generally it's just a racket that these psychologists have come up with. Psychologists are pretty good at figuring out ways to bill hours. I know that. All right, now, let's move into the domestic tranquility file. Again, from the Associated Press. Dateline San Diego, California, America's finest city. A California man accused of fatally beating his mother, cutting off her arm, and putting part of her skull in the refrigerator, has been found mentally incompetent to stand trial. A San Diego County judge reviewed a doctor's evaluation of one Brian Chinghua Chang last Monday and ruled that the murderer did not understand the murder charges he faces. Chang will be sent to a state mental hospital until he is fit for trial. His mother, Sherry, her body was found in January at her home. Detectives traced a bloody fingerprint back to her son, and they arrested him. They say that the two may have had a disagreement about money, but we're not going to be able to get to a trial because another psychologist running a racket has convinced the judge that because this fellow doesn't understand why we're going to kill him, we can't kill him, even though he brutally murdered and butchered his own mother. I mean, can't we draw the line somewhere? Like, brutally murdering and butchering your mother, can't we say that it really doesn't matter if he doesn't understand? Because he understood enough to chop off her arm and her head. And if he understands those things and doesn't understand other things that are productive in society, we should try him. And if he's convicted, we should remove him from society permanently via execution. I mean, can't we draw the line there? I'm willing to start just there with these liberals in government. I'm willing to just, could we draw the line at butchering your mother? I guess not. I guess not. Now on into the justice file. Michael Rexford McCormick, a 53-year-old Colorado resident, was found shot dead with 38-year-old Michelle Lee Thompson, who was reportedly his girlfriend or ex-girlfriend or some sort of acquaintance. She had been reported kidnapped last Wednesday. The deaths have been ruled an apparent murder-suicide. Not unusual, right? It happens every day. Well, listen to this story. After an all-night standoff, police broke a window and a single gunshot was heard. They burst in and found both dead. McCormick had shot himself, and the woman, Michelle Lee Thompson, had apparently been murdered some hours prior. Not unusual, right? Happens every day. Well, listen to this. In the 1980s, McCormick led investigators to four bodies. He was tried and convicted for murder in one of the deaths, and he started serving a life sentence in 1987. But he won an appeal. And he agreed to a plea deal during his appeal and was released from prison in 2006. And here we are in 2009, and he has murdered another person and now killed himself. If you allow someone who should not live to live, you run the risk of them murdering someone else. Now, who's going to be held responsible for this? Is it going to be the judge and the lawyers who worked out this plea deal, getting this murderer out of prison in 2006? Will they be held accountable in any way for the death of this woman? Well, they should be. Can't we draw the line there that if judges and lawyers let murderers free and they actually kill someone else, that those judges and lawyers should be held responsible to some degree for this crime? Couldn't we? Doesn't that sound reasonable to you people? I'm not a radical, am I? Perhaps not. Meanwhile, into the justice file. This is the justice delayed file. Innocence groups from around the country have asked the U.S. Supreme Court to hear the case of an Ohio man sentenced to die in September for fatally shooting three people. This fellow's name, his last name is Keith. Kevin Keith was sentenced to die for killing three people, including a seven-year-old girl, in a 1994 shooting in northern Ohio. He wounded three other people. Police and prosecutors say that Keith opened fire on a group in retaliation for a drug arrest that he blamed on a snitch that was related to the victims. The shooting happened, by the way, in February of 1994, and this fellow was convicted some 10, 15 years ago, and he's still alive. And if you let this bastard live long enough, Barry Scheck and the shyster lawyers and the racketeering psychologists will find a way to get him out of this, and he's going to kill somebody else. Do I want to get into the details? Okay, I don't have time to get into all the details, but the evidence is fairly clear-cut that this fellow's a murderer. He was convicted. One of the people shot and wounded actually testified against this fellow and pointed him out in court and said, "He shot me," along with a lot of other physical evidence. There's simply no question. But the Innocence Project and all their shysters are trying to delay the execution of this man. And in doing so, they put the society at risk. They put the public at risk of a madman being released. You cannot allow these people to live. And here's a perfect example from the justice file. In Haiti, on the afternoon of the earthquake in Haiti, while tens of thousands of Haitians were being crushed to death, this is from the Washington Post, more than 4,500 inmates slipped out of the wing of the National Penitentiary. Since then, the most notorious of the escapees have terrorized neighborhoods, stolen aid supplies, and fought ever more pitched battles amongst themselves in the streets of Haiti, amongst the misery and suffering the criminals who were allowed to live, who should have been dead, are now roaming the streets in Haiti. Now, they've had their turf wars have now spiked, filling the same city morgue that swelled with quake victims with gunshot victims. There were 50 gunshot victims in the past 3 weeks alone. Shocking, right? I mean, that's like 3 weeks in Compton, for crying out loud. That's terrifying. Well, 3 years ago, UNPOLICE, that's the United Nations police force, fought to capture these gang leaders, and apparently they did a pretty effective job. They captured dozens of gang leaders. They crippled most of the major gangs. The kidnapping and homicide rates plummeted. Why? Because they captured kidnappers and murderers. But what did they do? They allowed them to live. And God has told us in the Bible, not only should you not kill people who should not die, i.e., child sacrifice and the abortion holocaust, but you should also not allow people to live who should not live. And kidnappers and murderers should not be allowed to live. Why does God tell us this? It's not because he's arbitrary. It's because he knows that if you allow them to live, they will kill someone else. They will continue to hurt people. And it's happening in Haiti right now. And you know, it's interesting to see Sean Penn and his reports from Haiti. And I know Anderson Cooper, nobody watches him. I'm one of 20,000 people in the country who actually watched Anderson Cooper last year. But to see Sean Penn coming face-to-face with reality and seeming, from time to time, to realize that his own inane opinions about justice are ridiculous. Because Sean Penn has been reporting that if something is not done to control the criminal element in Haiti, that this is going to end in an even worse disaster. And it's just interesting to watch the evolution of moron Sean Penn as he comes face to face with the reality of what happens when justice is denied and delayed. And maybe it'll change his attitude. I don't know. I think he probably can't get any pot down there, so he might be thinking fairly clearly. All right. Now so all is not lost, ladies and gentlemen. Let's move into the domestic tranquility file from New York City, the Associated Press. A man named Asami Semdi, a 19-year-old student who's been in the United States for 6 months, was working at Famous Familia Pizza in East Harlem, and he was making a delivery to an apartment last Friday evening when a robbery attempt occurred. As Semdi headed to the 27th floor, he came across two men in a hallway, and they started harassing him and said they wanted a slice of pizza. And then one of the men pulled out a gun. Well, Semdi dropped the pizzas to the ground, and as the gunman reached down, Semdi lunged at them, tackled the gunman, knocked him off balance, and held them until police were able to come. Albert Alvarez, a 19-year-old thug, was arrested and has been indicted on charges of attempted robbery. Before Semdi went to the precinct to file a report, he delivered the pizzas. How about that? Now, this guy should be made an American citizen immediately. All right, now. But listen to this. According to Reuters, 20% of people polled in a global survey last week believe that aliens live in our midst disguised as humans. 20% of people believe this. And why, you might ask? Well, let me just give you a couple of examples and just ponder this. Greta Van Susteren. Ann Coulter. Mitt Romney. Okay, just think about that, okay? I mean, you might think that 20% of the people are just stupid. But just ponder that, okay? And while you do that, I'm going to get back to life as we know it. I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank KGOV, KGOV Radio at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA at PersonhoodUSA.com, Personhood Colorado, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, Theology Online at TheologyOnline.com or TOL.com, and of course, as always, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I will be back with you next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.